Welcome to the Nourish Me podcast. I'm Joanne Pavin, your host, and if you found yourself here, you're ready to take actionable steps to optimize your health and live a more balanced, productive, and creative life. In our tech-driven world, we need a reminder to slow down, stop the scroll, and take digital breaks. I'm here to inspire you to step away from your screen, to nourish yourself through nature and connection to others, to follow a new algorithm. The rhythm of real life. So let's get started. Hey, listeners and friends, welcome back to the Nourish Me podcast. This is Joanne Pavin, your host. If you're new here, I'm grateful you found me. Stick around. I am a certified wellness practitioner and health and human performance coach, and for decades, I've been helping people optimize their health and fitness and manage their stress. Today, I have another wonderful coach on the show who does just that. She is the Stress Less Coach, which is timely because April is Stress Awareness Month. And for years, I've opened up workshops with this eye-opening stat. The American Institute of Stress states that 75% of 90% of all doctor's visits are for stress-related ailments and complaints. Stress can play a role in headaches, high blood pressure, heart problems, diabetes, skin conditions, asthma, arthritis, depression, anxiety, and the list goes on. And according to the Center for Disease Control, the workplace is the number one cause of life stress. Listen to this. It's estimated that 120,000 people die every year as a direct result of work-related stress. Now, for the good news, I have my wonderful guest on the show today who will give you her proprietary 5-point empowered life process on how to manage stress and change your life by doing so. If you stick around, you'll get the 6th point, which is a bonus worth celebrating, no pun intended. My guest is Dr. Susie Castellanos-Hansley. She is a life coach, keynote speaker, and founder of Susie Castellanos-Hansley, LLC. She is known as the Stress-Less Coach. She helps high-achieving women ditch stress, create work-life balance, and live joyful lives. Sounds just what the doctors ordered for me. Her methods help people permanently reduce anxiety and stress by 50%, as well as giving them the tools to deal with future challenges that may come up in their lives. Susie has helped hundreds of people reduce stress through one-on-one coaching, keynote speaking, and her workshops. Her specialty is helping clients overcome the quote-unquote big five causes of overstress and burnout: anxiety, imposter syndrome, perfectionism, overworking, and procrastination. As a trauma-informed coach and trauma survivor, Susie shares her life story and helps us understand that stress is a result of layers of life experiences beginning before birth. This is a mini masterclass on how to start getting to the root cause of your anxiety and stress. You'll want to listen to the end when Susie gives us the full empowered life process and how to implement it. Without further ado, I give you Dr. Susie Castellanos-Hansley, or just Susie as she likes to be called.
Good morning, Dr. Susie.
Good morning, Joanne.
This is Dr. Susie Castellanos-Hansley. She is a life coach and a keynote speaker. And she is the Stress Less Coach, which is so important this month. We are in Stress Awareness Month. We are inundated by stress, but what is stress is what we'll go through today. And the tools that can get to the deeper reason why we're having stress. And Susie's been through a life journey that she'll share that helped her realize the best methods for managing stress. I would love to hear about how you have come to all these great tools. So give a little bit about your background, your upbringing, and how you came to realize there are some really good tools to manage stress.
Yeah, thank you so much, Joanne. And hi to everyone out there listening. I'm so happy to be here and help you understand stress more so you can stress less and feel better about your life. So I am a first generation Mexican American. I always begin with that in part because there was a lot of stress in my early childhood since I was a first gen and I came from poverty. I was raised by my Mexican grandmother who had a third grade education, and I was the first in my family to go to college. And then I got a PhD, I got a tenure track job, and I burned out. And I like to share that in part because getting a PhD and getting a tenure track job is going to be stressful for anybody. It is especially more stressful if you're the first and you don't know or see other people like you there. But what was happening at the time is I just basically blamed myself. I thought there was something wrong with me. I was doing it wrong. I was a fraud. And I kept thinking, how do I fit in more? I think I just felt like I didn't fit in. And I would see everybody else around me seemingly having their stuff together. And, you know, I looked very successful on the outside. And on the inside, I just felt like a total mess. Yeah. And over time, that's what caused the burnout, because I was too afraid to tell people how I felt. That just wasn't anything people were receptive to. The whole thing that happened for me is just sort of this idea. It's like, yeah, you have to just figure it out. Fake it till you make it. Just do it. And really what I found is that that was really hard for me, that I wasn't able to just do it. I wasn't able to fake it till you make it. And so I had a lot of shame for a lot of years. But mm-hmm. over time, then, you know, once I left academia and I was finding other jobs, et cetera, figuring things out, I found myself in a situation where it was a job I really liked, but I got a new manager and it was really hard. It was very challenging for me. I didn't realize until later, after I left the job and I had therapy, that this person was a narcissist and I was experiencing narcissistic abuse. And there are books about that. I could give some to Joanne to put in the show notes that really have helped me understand what that looks like and how to heal from that. But in that time, without knowing that, I was feeling really like I was just really self-doubting. It's like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I make this person like me, respect me? You know, am I really that bad that she doesn't trust me with things? Things like that, right? And mm-hmm. so it was during that job that I discovered life coaching. I heard about life coaching. I was following a podcast. I hired a coach myself. And it made a really huge difference for me to start noticing my thoughts, you know, how much of it was like, how am I thinking about this? So, you know, if this person does X, my default thought was to think there's something wrong with me. And then that felt terrible. And it was really stressful. And I kept trying to like produce and do more and please her. But as I started doing coaching, I started to switch how I thought about it. And it's not that I was like, oh, everything's great. It wasn't that, but it was really like understanding that, oh, this person is not someone I want to work with, but I'm going to stay here and until I find something better. So that gave me a little more power. It was still hard. Yeah. And that was really helpful. And then over time, I just realized, you know what, this is really amazing work, like to really feel like my feelings don't have to be determined by her. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to be a life coach. I was like, okay, I want to help people. So I got certified. I finished the certification in April of 2021. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to start getting clients and keep my job. And once I hit a certain amount of revenue in my business, then I can quit. Mm-hmm. And so I start putting myself out there. I start going, and where we met on Clubhouse, remember, that was mm-hmm. a great app in 2021 when, you know, we were under lockdown, we're trying to meet other people. It was so great. But one of the blessings of that app for me was that I started hearing other people talk about things that I hadn't really heard before. And one of them was anxiety. The other one was imposter syndrome. And mm-hmm. then I started to recognize trauma. And I was in a Clubhouse room, Joanne, where it was about anxiety. And so I go into this Clubhouse room thinking, I'm going to learn about anxiety so I can help my clients. But I go in there and instead of everything they're talking about is me. And I'm thinking, how could I have anxiety? And I raise my hand and I ask them, how can I have anxiety and not know it? He's like, yes, you can if you have early trauma. And it's basically the air you breathe and the water you swim in. And so that really changed my life. I started doing trauma therapy. I started learning about ways to coach the root causes of anxiety. Because even if you don't have trauma, we all have the same operating system. We all have this nervous system that can be dysregulated or regulated. And so what I learned about my own trauma and how to heal it ongoingly applies to everyone, whether or not you have known trauma or not. So that was really the big flip for me, is like even knowing that I had this thing and learning how to help myself. And now I help other people.
I think that's beautiful. And I remember in the conversation we had prior to this, or even just listening to the other podcasts that you've been on, if the listeners just a little overview of your background, but also your makeup, like you said that you are very sensitive. And I think a lot of people are sensitive and they cover it up today, just being in the workforce or just being in life, because we're made to think that we have to be strong. But can you give the listeners just that profile of Susie? Because it's important. I think we all are like each other, but I loved hearing that you're a sensitive child, that, you know, you're a feeling child. And then also coupled with the upbringing that you had, it was difficult and obviously made the nervous system what it was.
Yeah, sure. And I'll give a trigger warning. I am going to talk about rape, because so my thing is that my mother was raped by her landlord. And it was, so this is stuff that happened obviously before I was born. But the more I understood about this is that trauma isn't just the things that happen that you can remember. It's the things that happen before you have language. In fact, most trauma studies show that the most important year is the first year of life, as far as what kind of nervous system regulation you're going to have. And even before you're born, if your mother was traumatized and you're in her womb, you're going to be getting all the cortisol and adrenaline, and you're going to come out nervous. So I kind of just was, I came out nervous. I came out anxious without really knowing this, because she had been raped. She was told not to have him because she had an illness that made her heart weak. And they told her, if you have this child, you could die. And my mom chose to have me. Mm-hmm. And she did, in fact, have a stroke when I was born. And then she had one that killed her about a month before I turned two. And so my grandmother raised me. Mm-hmm. So those things are all things that happened before I had language. And for the longest time, my grandmother loved us, and she was, now I understand, emotionally abusive as well as physically abusive. And she really loved us and did the best she can. And she also didn't know how to care for somebody like me who is sensitive. So I came out sensitive. But it was also one of those things that all babies, when we are born, there's all these studies on this. We need to have attunement by our caretakers. That is, because when we come out of the womb, all we know is how to cry if we're upset. We don't know how to self-soothe. That happens at about age 6 or 7. And so for those first years, it's the responsibility of the caretakers to soothe the child and teach it how to self-soothe, so eventually it knows how. And what happened with me is that, if you can imagine, my mom has a stroke when I'm born. My grandmother is already caring for my older brother and sister and my two older cousins who live with her. And now she has her daughter who had a stroke, who was raped by her landlord, and a baby. I am pretty certain they did not have a lot of time to emotionally hold me or care for me. They probably gave me the basics. But I'm pretty certain that they didn't. I mean, and I make sense, right? Like, they're just, my grandma was traumatized, I'm sure. All I remember, though, is the earliest thing I can remember is being told, you're such a crybaby, except it was in Spanish. Ay, no seas llorona. So that's kind of that part of it, is that, of course, you know, so that does impact them, because then everybody in society is like, you're supposed, to your point, Joanne, you're not supposed to be a crybaby. And it's more true for men, which really stinks. Like, I feel for men, because they really have to suppress their emotions. And women are allowed, but in my context, it was also like a sign of weakness. And it is a sign of weakness. If you're working in the workforce and you're stressed out and you cry, people are going to shame you. So absolutely right what you said, Joanne, that that's a really hard thing.
We have to look at it differently now, especially today. There's such a mix, and what we have this awareness, and I'm not going down this route of like the diversity and inclusion and all that, but really they're making that, which is good. But what we need to do is just step back and look at our own energetic makeup and our nervous system, like you say, nervous system regulation, and that everybody comes in as adults with all these layers from their childhood. So I think that people taking a step back to realize like this person may be a narcissist or maybe a certain type in the workplace, but we don't really know all the layers behind that energy they're putting out. And that your nervous system regulation is really from birth and before birth, because it's the energy that you come in with. So you have these great tools. Now, when was that aha moment in your life where you realized, wow, I need to really step back and look at nervous system regulation? Like you were working with a life coach. When did you realize that it's not just
just my thoughts?
yeah, exactly. Like, when did you have that awareness? And what are some of the things that people can look out for? Because we both agreed that there are all these tools, like we mentioned, the cold showers, manage stress, you know, waking up an hour early. There's those systematic things that you can do to manage stress, but it's deeper than that. Can you go into the deeper nervous system regulation?
Sure. So I realized I needed to learn more about the nervous system. The big aha was that time that I had that I was in the Clubhouse conversation and realized I had anxiety and probably trauma. And at that point, I was already connected through Clubhouse with somebody I really liked, who is a psychotherapist who is in the UK. She was great. So I actually did end up hiring her, and that was really useful. And I will say, just as far as how did I know that this was an issue, it's that every time I went on Clubhouse to try to share and talk to people, I was a nervous wreck. And I'm a naturally vivaciously, you know, emotive, I love to talk to people kind of thing. And it was weird to me that I was so anxious and so tight every time I went on the Clubhouse. And I'm like, what is going on here? What I eventually realized is, yeah, that anxiety was the anxiety and fear of being it felt like death. It felt like there was a tiger going to eat me, you know?
Yeah.
And that is what it feels like to the nervous system, because what I didn't realize, and for a lot of us, we don't know, there's a huge difference between working for someone and working for yourself. And by deciding that I was going to put myself out there, it brought up all this stuff that I had never been brought up before. All this, the worthiness things. Are people going to like me? Are they going to judge me? Are they going to, you know, like in a way that I hadn't really anticipated? And so it was like my body was thrumming with anxiety. I would get on calls and, you know, to try to share about my stuff. And I just felt like I wanted to cry. And so with my therapist, we were doing all of that stuff. But I think the whole nervous system awareness came when I was having a conversation with a fellow coach who then told me about a program that she had done, because she had trauma too. And it was a program on somatic experiencing. So that is one of the modalities that people use for trauma healing. And somatic comes from the word somos, which is Latin for body. And the whole principle of somatic experiencing and why it works for trauma and nervous system regulation is that what happens is, say if something happens that makes us scared, we're going to secrete cortisol and adrenaline. So now I'm going to get into the science, but I think this is fascinating because this was the thing that made it like, oh, I dropped the shame as soon as I understood this. So the thing that really shifted for me was realizing this is not my fault. This is not a flaw in how I handle stress. And it's not even like, I always felt kind of like, oh, well, I had a terrible childhood. It's not fair. Now I can't get out of it. And I had that conversation. And it was like, once I realized, oh, the cause of this was the nervous system acting the way it's supposed to in the face of danger. Mm-hmm. And there are ways to undo that and rewire it. And then I was like, oh, cool. Now I get it. It's my operating system. Anxiety is not a bug. It's a feature.
Yeah. No, that's a great way to put it. Yeah.
So, yeah. So that was, I think, the big aha for me when this person told me about this program on somatic experiencing. I'll give you links. The person who does it is called Irene Lyon, L-Y-O-N. She is in Canada, and she does this whole program that teaches you everything about the nervous system and how to get into your body to release the stuff. And it was fascinating because it's not, you know, we were talking about the, like, some of the hacks that people will be like, oh, do you have trauma? Just dip your face into a basin of cold water and you'll feel fine. This is your nervous system hack. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, no, it's a process, and it's a layer thing, because I can speak to that. I've been a licensed massage therapist for 25 years. And so on the table, I'm releasing energies from people's past, and their traumas come.
For sure.
And they come to the surface in the release. But then there's all of, like, the second part is that somatic work where you have to realize what's doing to your nervous system. And because the skin is connected to the same layer as the nervous system, and ectoderm, that is the science that when we are activating skin, or say, like, you weren't held as a baby as often as you should be, which is the nourishment on the skin, that you are going to be a little more frazzled, because that is the way that we're calmed down when we're touched, just, you know, touching someone's hand. So those are things that definitely are a process-oriented thing. We don't just take a cold shower and then forget about it and think that's going to manage our stress, or, you know, it's a deeper process. So with your process, I think this would be a good time for you to talk about how you developed your process, or if there's a little bit of in between stuff that you wanted to share, but you developed a process to help your clients based on what you learned.
Correct.
And 5-step, but with a 6th bone.
There's a 5-step process, and it's got a bonus step 6. And the bonus step 6, I love it because it can come in at any time because it's a fun one.
Yeah.
So basically, let me just explain where the issue lies, and then you'll understand why the process works.
Okay. Yes.
So what we want to understand is that physiologically, we are animals.
Yeah.
Like everything from the single-celled amoeba to us, in order, the biological imperative is to survive and multiply. Although, you know, nowadays we don't need to multiply if we don't want to, but that's just biologically, it wants us to survive, right? It doesn't necessarily want us to be happy. It just wants us to survive. So for every animal going down to the one-celled amoeba to us, there is always a question being asked by our physiology. It is always there, even when you're asleep. It's happening right now as you're listening to this podcast. And that question is, am I safe or not? Am I safe or not? Am I safe or not? So physiologically, that is the most important question. It's always happening. And the way animals, including us, figure out if we're safe or not has to do with our ability to notice our surroundings very unconsciously. And, you know, if we're in a safe pack as mammals, you know, a lot of different things, like you're listening and there's no sounds of a really for animals. It's like, I don't hear a tiger growling. I don't.
Yeah.
You know, I see food in front of me. Good. I'm going to be safe. There's a nice place to sleep. All those things keep the animals safe. They feel safe. But when something triggers a potential pattern match to, oh, this is what I've learned through experience and through evolution, like the animals that figured out a growl means I might die, so I better get ready for fight flight. Then we have those triggers and we learn them, right? We learn what they are. We're not consciously acting on them. It's like fast, because it has to be fast. You can't stop and think, I wonder if that's a tiger, and then it eats you, right? So those are the most important things to learn. And the thing to learn is that animals in the wild, and including us, are going to be triggered probably hundreds of times a day. And Joanne, you were talking about how, like, you know, we both meditate.
Yeah.
How often do you get triggered? Like, if you meditate, you will notice how often your brain freaks out.
Oh,
and there's
gosh,
nothing.
Yes.
Right. Like, it's just natural. It's supposed to do that. And so the animals are, you know, animals, we are going to get triggered all the time. What happens is there is a trigger. And I want you to think of, say, Pavlov, for those of you who remember, you know, the ringing bell and then makes the dog salivate. That's basically 97% of our of what we do in life as animals is going to be conditioned, and it's really efficient. You're not wasting energy. So we have habitual patterns. The bell rings, we salivate. So one of the things is that we learn to notice which bells make us feel good, which bells make us freak out, right?
Yeah.
And for an animal in the wild, the design is there's a bell that makes them worry and freak out. The body automatically secretes cortisol and adrenaline to prepare for fight and flight. One of the things people don't know about cortisol is that that's necessary for there to be more glucose in your blood. So all of it is about, okay, you're going to have energy. You're going to have energy because you got to fight or you got to flee. And so what happens is the minute the trigger comes out, you have no control. The trigger and the response, the bell and the salivation, you have no control. It's going to happen no matter what till you're dead. The key thing is that for animals, what happens is they are able to stay in their bodies and figure out if it's really a tiger or not. And if it is, they run or they fight and hopefully they survive. But once they're safe, they shake it off. And they connect with, so I like to use the example of deer because I live in North Carolina and there's a state park behind me and the deer love to come eat my hydrangeas and whatever. Yeah. And then they're hanging out in a pack and they're like, oh yeah, that was scary. Okay, let's eat. Yeah. Right? That's what they do. And so they do that over and over and over again. Like, oh, there's a trigger. Oh my God, is it a tiger? Okay, it's not. Let me shake it off and go back to eat. So the differences between animals and human beings is that as we humans, we get triggered and then we are taught at a young age, why are you crying? You're being a crybaby. It wasn't that bad. Oh, you know, or even it could be like a parent who's overly like, oh my God, oh my poor little baby. Like, so, and then the kid unconsciously is like, oh my God, I need to suppress that because now it's making my parent freak out. And if they're freak out, I'm going to die. Like that's all physiologically happening. Like you never want your caretaker to be in distress, just physiologically, biologically, you will suppress yourself rather than to make your parent freak out just unconsciously. So what happens? That cortisol and adrenaline stays in our bodies. And what'll happen is like that becomes our pattern as human beings. Pretty much all human beings learn, unlike the deer, to or you know, animals will shake, they will scream, they will yawn, they will cry. And we know how to do all that, but we get that socialized out of us. So the cortisol and adrenaline stays inside.
I was just gonna stop you there because if we all just like, right, like we don't bark, we don't. You know, you hear all of this happen in the wild.
Yeah. But,
and part of, I don't want you to lose your thought, but I just wanted to interject because some of the meditations I've learned over the years are just that, like getting out the moan or the yell or the scream or the energy of that release of all that gets trapped up. And as humans, it'd be odd for us to be like, you know, letting out cries like that we hear in nature in the middle of the office, in the middle of the day, you know, we have to adapt. And it's like this.
There is a reason why we feel that way in the office. It's because we've been suppressing it all that time. It becomes a howl, but the triggers, all those little triggers are not howl worthy. They become howl worthy.
Oh, okay. Time. Good. Yeah. It's
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not like, so if you just kind of deal with it as you go, you're not going to have a desire to howl in the office or, you know, or God forbid, take an AK-47 and shoot people. That's part of the problem, right?
Yeah. No, you're so right.
You know, it's all of that. It's all of that. What happens is once you understand that the key thing is we've been suppressing. So we know now that the normal thing is to be like an animal. And when you've got that cortisol and adrenaline and you realize you're safe, you just release it. So the key thing in my process is that you have to know that you're triggered first. And so that is going to be A for awareness. You have to notice. Yep. So you're going to have to notice and name, oh my God, I'm anxious. Oh my God, I'm scared of failure. Oh my God, they're going to fire me. Oh my God, my mother-in-law just texted me and I don't want to see her.
Yeah.
Oh my God, there's a pile of laundry. See, I'm a total loser. There's
all those things.
But so the key thing is A for awareness. You have to notice a name that you're triggered. And that can be challenging initially. This is why, you know, people coach with me. It's that's probably the hardest part, because we have been trained our whole lives to suppress it. Mm-hmm. So you are now retraining your brain and your body to pay attention that you are actually feeling unsafe.
Yeah.
And not judge it and be curious, right? So that is A for awareness.
Okay. This is great. Are you going to give us the acronym ahead of time, or are you going to figure it out?
Well, it's going to be A, B, C, D, E, and then F. So it's like just the alphabet.
A, B, C, D. Yeah, the alphabet. All right. This is good. So A for awareness. That's easy to remember. No stress around that.
Okay. So remember, you still have the cortisol and adrenaline, right? A for awareness will help release some of it. Because just by being aware, you put this distance behind it, between you and it, but there's still going to be stuff there. So B is going to be for body. What does body mean? It means becoming present to where you are. So it could be paying attention to your body. It could be breath. It could be EFT, which is emotional freedom technique, or tapping. It could be just moving your body around however it wants to move. It could be looking around. There's a thing called orienting that animals do. It's like when you just literally get present in your space and be like, oh, look, there's my poster. There's my lamp. There's my phone. That by doing that, you are now creating more calm. Because this is what happens with animals. Animals stay in their bodies. And when there's no longer a trigger to trigger them, they naturally release the cortisol and adrenaline. So if you look around and you just name like 5 or 10 things in your office, it's going to release that. And then depending how strong the trigger is, there's like a ton of other things that I teach my clients, a ton. And so you always have a tool in your tool belt for how to release the cortisol and adrenaline and get back your body into feeling safe. Mm-hmm.
I love that. That is so true. And I think I've done that just without even knowing your process about, okay, if I'm going down a route where I'm getting anxious because of my thoughts, I'll be in the kitchen. I'll be like, I'm making coffee. And I'll just start saying what I'm doing because I have to distract the other rabbit hole that my mind wants to go down. That's making me like, oh no,
Right. So, right. Yeah. So you're already doing it. And I think a lot of people are already doing parts of it, mm-hmm. but when you give it a name, you become aware that you could be like, oh my God, I'm feeling anxious. Why am I feeling anxious? And it's like, oh, I'm feeling anxious because I'm telling myself there's too much to do. And part of the noticing and naming is also noticing, oh wait, that's not a tiger about to eat me.
Right.
Right. So then you have B for body. Now at that point, after A and B, you've gone from fight, flight, freeze. And now you're in neutral, possibly safety. Like, okay, I'm right here. I'm actually not about to die. You take a breath. And we go for C for consult. And that means you're going to consult your brain and your body before you make any decisions, which is what D is going to be. And before you execute, which is what E is going to be, right? Right. So what happens in C for consult, let's say you're feeling anxious and you're about to put your hand in the tortilla chips. This is a true example for me. Yeah. So so let's say, I'm like, I'm anxious. And then what happens is I'll just eat. But when I start to notice I'm anxious, then I go, oh my God. Oh, I'm anxious. Huh. What's going on? I'm anxious about that thing. Okay, not a tiger. I'm present. Maybe take a breath. Maybe if it's really angsty, I'll tap. And then I'm fine. And then I consult my brain. Am I actually hungry? How will I feel if I eat this?
You said you would tap. I just want to stop there. You would
tap.
That's
part of B for body. That's one of the things I can do to release the cortisol and adrenaline. I mentioned that before, the EFT, emotional freedom technique.
So you go to... You'll tap and then
whatever it is. Like sometimes it's not that stressful and I could interrupt it, but sometimes it's like, I'm really stressed out. I'm like, oh, okay. Maybe I'll even do a thought download, which is when I just write whatever's on my head and just get it out. All of that is like to get it out. And that process puts you back into safety and you're no longer caught in the cortisol, adrenaline, fear, whatever response.
Okay.
So then when I say consult, it's like once I've done those things, I could ask myself, for example, oh, but I'm actually hungry. Is this going to help me with my issue? What's my issue? And I ask those questions, like, what do I already know? My favorite question to ask is, what do I already know? I already know I'm not hungry. What else do I already know? I already know that we're going to eat in an hour. What else do I already know? That I'm just feeling like doing this because I'm stressed out about that project. What else do I already know?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I know that that's not that I'm stressed out about this aspect of it. What else do I already know? Well, I know this part of it. Oh, what else do I already? And so you do that. And that's going to even calm your brain even more because now you're going to feel more confident because now you're knowing what you already know. Because when we're in fight, flight, freeze, we don't know anything.
Yeah.
We're just going to die. Right. So now we do consult. And now that I've done that, then I go to D for decide. Mm-hmm. And what I like to say is, what's the easiest next step I can do right now that's only going to take me 5 minutes? And then I decide, whatever that is. And what happens is if you've done A, B, and C, D will just appear magically. You don't even have to think hard. You already know what it is. It's just that the stress was keeping you from accessing your own knowledge and wisdom. And then you do E for execute. You do that thing. And then my favorite bonus one is F for fiesta. I am pulling up my pom-pom.
Oh, I love it. That's good.
And here's why you want to celebrate. Because we are trying to rewire our brain and our nervous system. And the more you say good job for noticing these things, no matter how small, the more likely your brain is going to be like, oh, I'm getting a reward for noticing these things that for 50 years of my life, I was told I should ignore and suppress.
Yeah. And you're anchoring it. You're anchoring it with that celebration.
Yeah.
So I love that. So we all need to get pom-poms at our desk.
That's right. I have pom-poms. I give all my clients get a pom-pom and they get a little, I do a postcard that says you're already doing it. I'm already doing it. Yay me. Because one of the key things is like, you do have to look for the wins. And a lot of the time we're always looking at the gap in where we are versus where we want to be. And you want to train yourself to look at the gains from where you started and where you are now. Yeah. One of my cardinal rules is you never say, oh, I'm trying to do that. I will say, oh, did you do it once? Well, yeah. Okay. You're doing it. I'm already doing it. Yay me.
You're doing it. Instead of trying, right?
Right. Because you're not trying, you're doing it.
Yeah. I learned it years ago. It was when you try, you lie. And I know some people have to use try. We have to use try in our vocabulary. But when it's continually used, like, oh, I'll try. Well, it's like, no, you'll do it, right? You're doing it.
That's the whole Yoda thing, right? Do or do not. There is no try. But one of my favorite things is that I learned in a course once is, and here I'm going to walk you through this. And if you're listening, try this with us at home.
Yeah. Okay.
Or maybe not this in the good. Car. Try it another time. If you're in the car, don't try this, but grab a small object, like a pen, you know? So I'm holding up my pen and I'm going to tell you, try to drop the pen. Okay. Ready? Try to drop it. 1, 2, 3, try. You're not doing it. Now I want you to drop the pen. Ready? 1, 2, 3, drop the pen. Like, it's crazy. Like, literally our brains don't move. That is
exactly.
Like when you do that, don't try it, do it.
Yeah. Because your command, like I'm listening and my nervous system is following your command, and the command for try is really not.
Right. So, try is different than do. So you want to just pay attention to that. And one of the key things is that what we're doing is rewiring our nervous system and our brain when we do my empowered life process that I just taught.
Is that what it's called? Your empowered life.
That's what it's called. Your empowered life process.
So we have, let's go through them. A, B, C, D, E, and F as our bonus. But A is awareness.
Mm-hmm.
B is body.
Mm-hmm.
consult to see.
Mm-hmm.
D, decide.
Mm-hmm.
E, execute.
Mm-hmm.
And F, fiesta.
That's right.
I'm trying to roll my
And the reason I like F as the bonus is that F can go anytime after any point. It doesn't have to wait till the end. So in fact, when I'm helping my clients, the hardest part is A and B. Because again, we've been taught so much to not be in our bodies and not notice. We just get stuck in it. I mean, when you think about it, like say if you're triggered about something at work and you need to get it done, you're not going to go to A, you're not going to go to B, you're not going to go, you might go to C and consult your brain. But what's happening is if you're in fight, flight, freeze, you're going, I should do this. No, should I do this? No, should I do this? So you might consult in that way and then do nothing. Or you might not even do that. And you go to D for decide. And you're like, well, I'm just going to do this thing.
Yeah.
And then you go in and do it. But if you didn't do the consult, if you didn't do the body and the awareness, you're doing it out of fight energy. And that's why there's a lot of successful people who just do things, but they're still stressed out because they're not taking care of the first part to create the safety and then come from the part of themselves that feels creative, empowered, and then creates flow. They're doing fight, 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 fight.
Yeah. And then they burn out.
And
I want to go to the story, the part of your story, which we didn't share, but if you want to just share a minute of it, or that you did go through where you burnt out and entered a 15-year
midlife crisis.
but I think that's important for people to know, because you are this accomplished woman with this great academic background and a career that was, everything in your life has been an excellent out. You know, I'm looking at it on the outside and I know.
Yes, I look great on the paper, don't I?
No, but I'm saying, like, I would be like, well, this woman, she's a golden rock star. You know, I know in your journey, you've had a lot of trouble with accepting that you are all these great things, right? But you have this PhD and you burnt out, and you attribute that burnout then to just that unawareness of that nervous system overload.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I was running scared. I was in part because of my background. So the specifics of my background of having come from poverty and recognizing that when I turned 18, there was no safety net.
Yeah.
And then there was a lot of other kind of pressures that I had put on myself of, I need to be like the great savior who comes, helps my family after. There's just like a lot of things like that, that are specific to my story, you know, as a first gen person, or even if you're not like a first generation immigrant, if you're like the first in your family to go to college or anything, or to go to the, you know, the white collar, you know,
exactly.
There's a lot of pressure, right? Like, oh, I gotta be successful, right? And even if you're not, even if you're middle class and your parents are educated, you know, you probably got pressure to be like, oh my God, I gotta perform, I gotta make them proud, you know, da 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 da. So I think that's common for all of us, you know, with different flavors and extremes to it, depending on other things. Yeah. But let's just say that we, a lot of us have that. And so there's a pressure to succeed, to prove yourself. And inside, I just kind of felt like, I don't think I'm good enough at this. Like, I just, and it really showed up in the way it showed up for me. You know, I've talked about fight, flight, freeze. Those are kind of the three places where our nervous system goes when we're feeling unsafe. Well, I was the person that kind of basically jumped through all three all the time. And I think a lot of us do that. What'll happen is I would be determined and be like, okay, I'm going to do this. So that's fight energy. It was never through flow. It was always through fear. Fear was driving. You know, sometimes I'm not going to say it wasn't ever, you know, sometimes I was feeling determined, and that was coming from safety. Like, oh, I got this. But then what happened is, I would run into a mishap, or I would run into a problem, an issue. And then I would go into freeze because I would be overwhelmed. And then I would see the deadline coming and I'd be like, oh my God. So then I'd go into fight energy, like, hurry, 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 hurry. And then I would go into flight energy, where I'd be like, shiny object, I really should just clean my house. That's procrastination, by the way, is
procrastination
is a flight. And then I would be like, oh my God, the deadline's coming. And then I would go into fire, you know, like, you know, go fight, fight, fight energy. And then I would run into another issue and then be like, oh, time to freeze again and try to like stay like anxious and unable to do anything. I would just bounce around like that. But the key thing is like, as long as I had a deadline, I could use fight energy to finish, but I would be exhausted. And I would feel so ashamed of myself because it's like, I didn't do it from a place of feeling confident or at all. Mm-hmm. It was just coming from a fear-based, I have to do this or else. And so mm-hmm. I would just, and so that's what creates the burnout. Like, because really I'm just living with a lot of cortisol and stress and I'm like the deer who shake it off or, you know, or whatever. I was holding it in because, you know, because that's what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to admit that you're scared.
So when you're working with clients, let's move to this because this is really important. How are you working differently than like a regular life coach? Because you're stressed less. Mm-hmm. And would you say what makes you different? Or this is a time to really inform listeners of how can they recognize that they need you? Sure. They need Susie.
Well, so what the way I differentiate myself is that in a way, I'm almost like a trigger coach because here's the thing. It is not about, oh, I'm going to stress less by making sure I get off of work at 5 and putting my phone away like an hour before so I can sleep well. It's like you can plan all that stuff, but what's going to happen is unconsciously you're still triggered. You have to deal with the nervous system and you have to figure out what are the things that trigger it? What are the things that our bodies and our brains have decided are as big as death? Mm-hmm. And yeah. for us, for all mammals, the biggest fear is getting kicked out of the pack. And I want you to understand what that means, that for mammals, our safety lies in numbers. And if you get out of the pack, the tiger is going to get you, right? And so for, you know, if you imagine our Cro-Magnon men and women in the cave, they needed to get along. Because if you were the jerk who never did work or you were annoying, they're going to kick you out of the cave. And then guess what? The tiger is going to get you, right? Yeah. So we have that. I really want you to hear this number. Hundreds of millions of years of evolution have made us terrified that we will get kicked out of the cave. And what a lot of people will do is try to tell you, oh, just don't think that. Oh, what do you care what other people say? Oh, just think, you know, empowering thoughts. And when that happens, just push them aside. You cannot push those aside.
No.
Until you're dead. You will not be able to push them aside. They're going to come up. The key thing is to know that it's normal that they're going to come up and they're going to make you scared and anxious. And then you deal with the fear and anxiety by understanding that's what happens and that's what's happening and recognizing, oh, I'm being afraid and anxious. This feels like I'm going to get kicked out of the cave right now. And, oh, wait, not a tiger, just an email from my boss. And, yep, I can be a little nervous, but I don't have to be terrified because he's not like the worst thing that'll happen is what? I'll get fired. And I know that can feel terrifying, but I'm not going to die and end up in a van by the river. To quote,
yeah,
a Saturday Night Live skit, right? Like most, right? And most of it, here's the thing that yes, you could get fired. Yes, something like that could happen. But when you are thinking that it's going to happen and you are going to, and it feels like death, you're now stressed out. And, you know, honestly, 99.9% of the time that you are called into the office by your boss, are you getting fired? No. Mm-mm.
No.
So we want to stop assuming that those triggers that could be construed as I'm about to get kicked out of the cave and eaten by a tiger is not actually what's going to happen.
Yes.
So what I teach you is how to see those things moment by moment, because it is a moment by moment thing that we either am I safe or am I not safe? Do I feel safe? Yeah. Am I not safe? Am I safe? Am I not safe? And your power comes from knowing that those ebbs and flows are normal. They're nothing to be ashamed of. They're not a sign that you are weak. It is your biology and physiology from hundreds of millions of years.
Yeah.
And when you unshame that and separate that from your sign that I am a weakling and there's something wrong with me and I shouldn't feel this way, What I guarantee my clients is that they will reduce their stress and anxiety by at least half. Why is that? Because the biggest stress isn't even the original trigger where we think, oh, am I going to get kicked out of the cave? It's the addition of, oh my God, there's something wrong with me. I shouldn't feel this way. See, I'm too anxious, blah, 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 blah. So when you understand that you should be scared, yeah. You know, it's like, you know, when my cats hear the doorbell and it's Amazon, they don't know that. They think it's a tiger and they run under the bed.
Yeah.
They're pretty smart.
Yeah.
They don't have any reason to know. The difference is that they will come out of the bed as soon as they no longer hear the doorbell and they're fine.
And they're fine. And that, mm-hmm.
Right, like 5 minutes later. But how many of us stay under the bed metaphorically because we're so freaked out?
And then shame ourselves.
Reason we stay under the bed for more than 5 minutes is because we're shaming ourselves.
Yeah.
Because I want you to imagine, right? Like, what would it be like if you could think or feel anything and didn't feel any shame?
That's big. Yeah, that is so big. And sometimes we don't even know that we're doing it. We're just programmed to do it. So we continue in that path of just this unconscious shaming all the time, you know, because we're programmed to do it.
Yeah.
So you're shining a big flashlight on it. You're saying, everybody here, let's stop this insanity now, right? And that's really what you do. You can help people identify their triggers.
Right, because I'm going to be honest. This would be very hard to do it alone without a coach. Why is that? Because this is hardwired hundreds of millions of years for us to feel scared of things. And for our whole lives, we have been taught that those very things that are naturally supposed to occur are shameful. Mm-hmm. So it takes a lot of, I mean, it's not like a lot of work. It's actually fun. But yeah. In 6 months, you're going to be a different person when you coach with me. Like, you will literally, like, the things like, when my husband says that thing, or my mother says that thing, or my kid says this, or when I see the laundry, or when I see a calendar that has no gaps, or when my boss calls me into my office, or if you're an entrepreneur, when nobody likes my post, yeah. Nobody clicked on my buy now button.
Yeah, no, exactly.
You're able to pause and you're going to be able, this is my favorite quote. This is Viktor Frankl. It's attributed to Viktor Frankl. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is your power and your freedom. Mm-hmm. So it's not a problem that the bell rings and that you salivate. You just get to pause and recognize, oh, I'm salivating because of that bell. And it's not actually a threat. And I can get back to dealing with my stuff. And that's the power. That's what's powerful. That's what's available for all of us.
Yes, Susie, that is amazing. That is. And how can people find you? Where would you like them to go? I know you have an amazing website and you also have a great quiz on there. Do you want to tell people a little bit about that?
Sure. So you can find me at lifecoachsusie.com. So it's www.lifecoachsusie.com. And my name is spelled Susie. And on that page, you're going to find out all about what I do. You can schedule, because the first step toward working with me is doing a free 50-minute stressless coaching consultation call. And that's an opportunity for us to find out if we would work well together. Like, you bring your stressors, whatever's stopping you, and I provide you with some insights on what's really going on and how I can help you. And then if you want to work together, we would decide to do that. But that call is really transformative, whether or not you choose to work with me or not. But, you know, I would love to help you. And then the other thing is that you can also access my quiz. It's called What's Your High Achiever Archetype? Because I do tend to work with high achievers. When I say high achievers, it's not necessarily like, oh, I'm a C-level person trying to climb corporate. It's more those of us who are like, oh my God, I just want to learn more. Ooh, I just want to try that. Ooh, I want to grow and get better. And so that makes us high achievers. Like, we don't want to just sit on our laurels. We like to be in the game and keep learning and growing. And so that quiz will teach you what your high achiever archetype is. That is, like, what are your tendencies and strengths that make you really successful? But also on the flip side, how those tendencies taken to an extreme are what creates overwhelm and stress. And so then I will give you tips on how to reduce those. And pretty much everybody who's taken that quiz is like, oh my God, that is me. So I think you will find it really valuable to get insights and some ideas of how to reduce your stress.
I love that. That's a great resource. I will have all this in the show notes, by the way. And you are on LinkedIn. You are on Instagram. Is there a one that you choose for people to connect with you on?
You can connect with me on any one that you prefer, but I do tend to spend most of my time on LinkedIn.
That's great. And are you still active on the Clubhouse?
I am not on Clubhouse much, but I know we were talking about, you know, it's really great to create community and live events where people can share. So I feel
has audio now. LinkedIn audio.
It does. And I'm going to announce this right here for you right now, Joanne, that I think we should do some kind of thing on stressing less and helping people on LinkedIn. So maybe people can keep an ear out for that. But I definitely
You read my mind.
Did I?
Yeah. No, you did. I was just thinking, oh my gosh, there's so much more. We're on schedule here, but and obviously I want to be mindful of your time. But I was like, there's so much to uncover. We still have so much to say.
Yeah. And I know you have a lot to say on this. So, you know, just all your experiences as in body work and doing all the things that you do, like I think we would be a great tag team. So I think we should do that. But I definitely want to bring people into the conversation, answer their questions, just give as much value as possible for people, because everybody has a lot of stress. And
it's so important. Everyone does. You can't get away from it. We're animals.
Yeah. And what I was going to say, Joanne, and I think this is true of both of us. It's like, look, one of the things that I love about you, And I feel the same way, is that we learn a lot from the things that challenge us, like both you and I, and we want to just help people. Like, we just want people to not experience the challenges we experienced and to be able to help them live a better life. So, you know, so that's one of the things that I love about you and that I so appreciate about you.
Oh, thank you, Susie. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you taking the time to share all your great your ABCDEF. I love that. And you call it the empowerment, your 5-step.
Empowered life process.
Yeah, the empowered life process. And so we are so grateful for that. I know this will help anybody who's listening and awaken them to more tools to help manage their stress. So we will meet again. We definitely will. And I think there's a lot that you can share even in mental health, with mental health awareness. There's so much more. We will reconvene in another conversation.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for being here. And we will sign off. You will find all of Susie's stuff in the show notes. And let's stress less this month, right? And every month.
Yes. Stress less, live more.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And if you feel inclined to nourish this podcast, please leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts.